and welcome to the fourth episode of Let's Talk Iran, providing Iranian-American perspectives on current events and policies that shape U.S.-Iranian relations and affect the Iranian-American community. This program is brought to you by the National Iranian-American Council, otherwise known as NIAC. I'm Nobar Elmi, and I'll be your host. I'm here today with Mr. Masoud Khodabande, a former member of the Mujahideen-e-Khalq. The Mujahideen-e-Khalq, otherwise known as the MEK, has been designated by the U.S. State Department as a Foreign Terrorist Organization, or FTO, ever since the FTO list was established in 1997. Masoud kindly conducted a telephone interview with us from London to discuss his experience as a former high-ranking member of the MEK and to discuss the repercussions delisting this organization would have not only on foreign policy but also from the human rights angle. Can you give our audience a brief background about your history with the Mujahideen? You know, how were you first introduced to them?
I became involved with Mujahideen-e-Khalq before the Islamic Revolution in Iran, before 1979. And during the revolution, I went to Iran. I was a student in London in that time, but then I went to Iran during the revolution. I came back from Iran by order to start the supporting organization in London. We engaged with that, and then we had the order of occupying embassies. We did that. After that, I went to Paris. By that time, Mr. Rajavi was in Paris.
So when you say you were given the orders, those were orders given to you by the leaders of the Mujahideen?
Yes, we were having orders by the leaders of Mujahideen. For a period of time, I had somebody in London, but again, he went to Iran and he started arguing. They called us and they said, well, you are directly connected to Tehran now and you get orders directly. Orders, there were all sorts of orders. I mean, I personally had orders from buying things, making contacts between people, to occupying embassies. All sorts of things would have been involved in that time.
Okay. Well, just to get a better understanding, I guess, of how this all came about, I know you said at the time you said you were a student in London. Who was the first person who told you about the Mujahideen, and why did it pique your interest? Why did you think it was the proper path to take?
Before the revolution, it wasn't that clear-cut. When I was working in London, it was basically giving leaflets out clandestinely, printing with the facilities of those days, stencils and these things. In that time, me and many of my colleagues, we were quite young, and our basic understanding of politics, at least for myself in those days, it was no more than clandestine papers about Mujahideen or from Fedayis. And because I was a religious person, I was attracted more to the Mujahideen.
So what ultimately made you decide to leave the Mujahideen?
It took a long time. What basically brought me to the end was the suppression of the Kurds in 1991. But obviously, 1991, I couldn't come out, and I was under sort of, they had this feeling that I might not like it because I have been talking about it. So 1994, I brought Mrs. Rajavi as the head of the security. I brought her clandestinely to Paris. And when she went back on 96, basically that was the time I didn't go back, because I knew if I go back, that's the end of it. I came from Paris to London. I introduced myself again to my contacts here because they knew that I'm working with Mujahideen. And basically saying that, look, I'm out of it. Which from that time, it took a bit of time, a few years to stand on my legs. And then after that, I started trying to help as much as possible the ones that they can run away from the organization, which was increasingly getting more and more.
It must have made it even more difficult for you, though, you know, having such titles and then, you know, leaving the organization.
The most difficult part is that you have convinced yourself that you are above others. Mm. And that breaks down when you come out. The title is not that important. As being a Mujahid is important. You have been led to believe that you are different. You are a more evolved creature than the rest of the humanity. And when you come out and you compare yourself in a factory or in an office with others, and you can't do half what they can do because you have left everything and, you know, the world has moved forward, that is the breaking point. I remember the first time I went to buy my breakfast. I couldn't do that because I hadn't done that for years. And that was because I've been living in a close environment, close society, what I believe they call it cult nowadays. Mm-hmm. That is the hardest part when you come out.
In your biography on your website, you mentioned that you're not surprised by the fact that the Mujahideen is listed as a terrorist group in Western nations. Why is that?
Terrorism is probably some sort of word that everybody can interpret it according to their own belief. But what comes to Mujahideen, and especially between Mujahideen and the United States, it goes to the root of the organization. When I was a young member, we used to sing all the songs against imperialism, against the United States. It was, for me, it wasn't called terrorism in those days, but it was obvious that the first act of terrorism in Iran was against the Americans during the visit of President Nixon. They attacked the head of American Information Center, at the same time attacked the Yorkshire Bank, which is a UK-based bank, the Pan Am office in Tehran, and little bit after that, they assassinated 6 American servicemen. That was the starting point, and I believe that has not changed, because anybody was saying it's changed, they should just look at the logo of the Mujahideen and how it's been interpreted, and has never been said anything except that. Having said that, that was the start, but now if you look at it, it's over 16,000 Iranians, 25,000 Iraqis, many Afghanis, French, British, American, which have been victims of this situation. Now, whether you call it terrorism or whether you call it anything else, these people have been killed and somebody has been taking responsibility for it. They have announced that, look, we have killed these people. So if that's not terrorism, then you should wonder what terrorism is.
Right. And another word, I guess, or another phrase that we oftentimes hear when we talk about the Mujahideen is not just terrorism, but also human rights abuses. You gave some specific examples of when you were trying to come out and others who tried to leave the Mujahideen, how you had been under such a cult-like mentality that you didn't even know how to function in everyday life or in you know, civil society. So recently there has been a lot of news about these kinds of human rights abuses occurring inside of Camp Ashraf. You know, some of the escapees have said that members are forbidden from using the telephone. You mentioned that as well. They're forbidden from using the internet or listening to the radio. They cannot contact their family members outside of the camp, etc. And in addition, that members are not even given the choice of leaving the camp, and that if they escape and if they're caught, they'll face execution. Can you explain a little bit the conditions inside of Camp Ashraf and some of the brutal requirements that are required of the Mujahideen members?
First of all, thank you very much for mentioning the camp, because whether they are terrorists or not terrorists, they are in the list, they are not in the list. It doesn't affect that much the situation that is ongoing in Iraq. Mm-hmm. Up to 2003, we had this excuse to say that, look, Saddam is there, nobody can do anything, including myself, I couldn't do anything else. After 2003, up to now, 8 years is gone, but this camp is still closed. I went there 2008, and we had a report out, and we talked with the government of Iraq and the NGOs there. 2009, I put another report, and 2011, again, we had the third report from Camp Ashraf. It's inaccessible. Let me tell you that we have the films of people trying to run away, and they are being captured by the Mujahideen's leaders and beaten up and taken away. The films are there, the Iraqis are investigating. The threat of mass suicide is the only thing that they're putting in front of us. And nobody capable of breaking this siege. Now, within this parameter, which is about 7 square kilometers, say, nobody knows what's happening. The only information that we have is either from the top or from the people that they run away. One thing we know, because they have announced it themselves. There is no marriage, there is no children in this camp. For the last 20 years, anybody that has been pregnant somehow has been killed and is over 10. The pictures from the top shows the graveyard from 2003 to 2007 has been tripled, and we don't know what's happening. The new part of the camp is being closed by new barriers, so nobody can see the inside of it. But what is clear in there is that people do not have access to basic things, radio, television, police, judiciary system. They are living within, they have their own government within the government, and they're ruling themselves. People that they come out, they are saying that if you are critic, they will stop your medication, they even stop your food. There has been at least 5-6 cases of people dying, which they have been putting it as one of the ridiculous ones is that somebody has been hanged, and they're saying that he hanged himself because the loudspeakers were too loud. That cannot continue. That is the basic thing. Whether, as I said, you want to put them in terrorism. Look, I'm not American. I don't vote in America. But I work with the Iraqi government. Whether they're enlisted or whether they're not enlisted in America, somebody has got to open the doors and see what is happening in this camp. There is not one or two cases. There's not 5 or 10. There is tens of people missing, people that they have been named in 3 different versions. That, look, this guy has been killed because Iran has been attacking. No, this guy has been killed because the Americans bombed it. No, this guy has been killed because at the end of the time, the people that they ran away, they said, no, we saw him being shot from the back by the leaders.
I don't know if there's even really a clear answer for this, but what can we do to help some of the defectors of the Mujahideen to leave the organization and to break free of the cult?
First thing for the Mujahideen inside and outside is medical help. Some of these people, as I was saying, for 20 years, they have been under psychological pressure. Some of them, they need, and that's why we always emphasize in Iraq that they should be contacted through humanitarian organization. Not the Iraqi government, not the American government, not the Iranian government, not the military, not the soldiers. They are not, the soldiers are to kill everywhere in the world. These people need humanitarian organization. And I'm sometimes, 2005, we had Human Rights Watch putting a report out. I don't know what's happening now. Start convincing, at least the ones that they have contacted Mujahideen, start convincing them to open the door. Before thinking about whether this organization is for this side or against that side, let them not be slaves. Let them have access to their society. Let them read paper. And that is not going to be happening unless there is international pressure on the Mujahideen.
As you're probably aware, the Mujahideen is conducting a multi-million-dollar lobbying and media campaign within Washington, D.C. to become delisted from the foreign terrorist organization list. This includes paying thousands upon millions of dollars to politicians within Washington to support their cause. So what consequences do you think delisting the MEK will have on U.S.-Iran relations? And what consequences will it have on the peaceful pro-democracy movement happening inside of Iran?
Let's make this clear, that if you delist an organization or if you put it on the list, the nature of the organization doesn't change. It's your view, how you see this organization. Now, if you say, the Mujahideen Khalq, they probably would have been terrorists before they went in the list. Now, if you try to take them off the list, let me put it another way. If you say somebody has killed these many people, and I enlist outside the list, I invite them to my house to have a speech or work with us. That sends the hatred message. And I can't believe that why this hatred message is being sent, because there has been some progress in the American policy in recent years, which many don't like it, and they want to jeopardize it. The same way that in Iran they don't like it, and they want to jeopardize it. The new opposition of Iran, it's dangerous to many parts in Iran, in Europe, in America, which they don't want it. They want to stop it. The best way is to meddle things with sending this message of hatred. Otherwise, not Mujahideen, everybody knows, even the supporters of Mujahideen, they never claim that Mujahideen are going to be somebody in Iran or in Iraq. It's just a matter of stopping any other progress that this can be used for.
You made a very interesting point that you said Mujahideen supporters, you know, don't want to know that they're not going to be anything inside of Iran.
The simple fact is, you can ask an Iranian. I mean, Iran, although the state that it is, it's open. People can talk to people in the street in Iran, and they can talk to the Iranians in America. Is there any opposition group that they think that Mujahideen can be useful for a future democracy in Iran? I haven't seen that. But I can tell you one thing, that even if you want to use it as a tool, which they say they want to use it as a tool, they, many places I hear it, that they say that we want to privately, at least they say we support it because it's a terrorist group. But it would be a sad situation for the American foreign policy. The other side of the message would be that, look, here, money can prevail over morality. If you spend money lobbying, I might have a problem because, as I said, I'm not used to it. But that is the system. That is the democratic system that you have in America, and I respect it. But the misuse of this democratic system, which the Mujahideen are doing by money, that is something that is not going to be in the interest of long-run interest of Americans.
A 2004 FBI report on the Mujahideen was revealed in June 2011, which states that the Mujahideen is, quote, actively involved in planning and executing acts of terrorism, unquote, despite the organization's alleged renunciation of terror in 2001. Can you speak to this this particular report and the fact that this says that they may still be planning and executing acts of terrorism?
I can let you know that the heads of the lobbying groups of Mujahideen, which are in Washington, they're both wanted men in Iraq for crimes, war crimes. I can also let you know that even right now in Iraq, there is evidence that they are helping the insurgency. And that's not my view, it's the Iraqi government's view, which they have passed it to the U.S. as well. The point that the report of FBI in 2004 says they are continuing their violence, is not news to me, because I've never heard otherwise. From the logo of Mujahideen to the speeches to the, they are attacking everybody with whatever they can. They are attacking their family. They are turning pieces of metal into missiles to hit 8-year-old people in Baghdad. Their only point of existence is violence. It's written in their ideology, it's written in the face of their leaders, and they have never renounced it.
In that same 2004 FBI report, it also states that, quote, another tactic that the Mujahideen has been employing is disinformation regarding former Mujahideen members and witnesses who have come forward to testify and speak against the Mujahideen. The Mujahideen will brand these former members and witnesses as Iranian government agents, unquote. Is this something that you have experienced, considering the fact that you are a former member and that you have come forward to speak against the MEK? Have you had them accuse you of being an agent of the Iranian government?
It's more than accusing of agent of Iranian government. In the cult culture, agent of Iranian government means you are being targeted, means you are, we are allowed to kill you. And it has happened that they have attacked with knives in the street. Not personally myself, but I have witnessed that. So it's not new, but it's ludicrous saying that the Iranian regime has got, I don't know, 800, 900 agents across Europe and in Washington. It's ludicrous. The whole thing is being played in the hand of Iranian regime. The words of the American senators in support of Mujahideen Khalq is being broadcasted more than anywhere in the Iranian papers. Who is helping who? That every person and all of them die-hard anti-regime military personnel that they have left Mujahideen. They have gone, they have been fighting with arms against the Iranian regime. How can they become agents of the regime?
Well, I feel like we could probably go on and on for several more hours because this is an extraordinary message that you've been sharing with us. And thank you for your insight. Thank you, Masoud, for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you very much.
To read more about Masoud Khodabandeh's experience with the MEK, go to www.khodabandeh.org. That's khodabandeh.org. To learn more about the MEK, visit www.mekterror.com. And as always, make sure to visit us at www.niacouncil.org.